Hello and welcome to the Research VR podcast. I am your host, Oz Balabanian, and with me today is Mr. Peter Lickoff.
Hello.
And Nathan Rowe.
Howdy.
So today's guest is Nathan from Sculptor VR, one of the OG apps on Steam that came out the day of or the day before the Vive launch, as Nathan was telling us before we started the show. Or yeah. Australian launch day, as you called it.
One person on Reddit in Australia posted they had a Vive, and I immediately clicked the launch button and made it. We had it ready for 3 days before or something, which felt like forever back then.
Yeah, absolutely. And well, I guess a lot of people that had the first Vive, or at least the Vive Pre, will have probably had been exposed to Sculptor. I know that's how I was originally. That's how I got my hands on it, was when the Vive Pre came out. They had 7 free experiences that were given to developers, and Sculptor was one of them. And another shout out to you in terms of forward thinking and really setting trends. I think Sculptor was the only app out there that was even experimenting with scale back then, or even had scaling options to go up and down.
That might be true.
Dude, it is true. And it blew my freaking mind. That was the coolest thing ever.
Yeah. That was, man, it took some experimenting to get that right. But The hardest part was the visualization. And when we figured out that if you just put the player in a box and then you see the whole box scale, then it wasn't such a insane leap to picture yourself as a small thing before you became small, et cetera. So,
well, before we dive deeper into Sculptor, because we have a lot to dig here. This is going to be a good conversation. We're going to get through the news. We're recording this on October 22nd. So this was basically a week and a half after Oculus Connect. We didn't have a chance to record last week. So we'll go over some of the Oculus Connect news Nathan, you were there and I was there. Peter fortunately wasn't. I did meet some of the fans actually from Research VR. We didn't do a full-on meetup. Unfortunately, no. I didn't think it was gonna make itself into the meetup that we were talking about. But no, it was really fun actually. A few fans came up, a few listeners, and we just had a really cool conversation. So hello to everyone that was listening and came and said hello, hi. That was really warmed my heart. It's a beautiful moment. So Connect, in terms of, this is the yearly announcements that come out of the walled garden of Oculus, and they suddenly let developers in and talk to the rest of the world about their new headsets. And this year, I think the two biggest things that we'll cover quickly are the Oculus Go, which is the Gear VR all-in-one headset that's called Oculus Go, and the Oculus Santa Cruz Prototype 2. So, Nathan, have you thought about the Oculus Go, or is that something that's interesting to you in terms of Sculptor?
Yeah. Sculptor VR is out on Daydream. Mm. You've got this three-DOF controller, but you let wrist twist, like you're turning a key, move your tool out and in. So that you can position a tool in three-dimensional space and sculpt. And it's not as good as moving your hands through space, but it gives you some of the power. And, it's cool to be able to give some of that power just to mobile users. So we definitely want to be, an Oculus Go. We just got to figure out if it makes sense. Right. Whenever launch titles don't make any sales because nobody has the thing, right? So I don't know. We're trying to figure out if there's a way to partner with Oculus or something.
That's really neat, actually.
But I think it'll be cool.
You created extended reach and a 3DOF controller, essentially.
Right.
With a turning gesture. Do you hold any buttons to kind of to extend your reach, or how does that exactly work?
No, it's just happening all the time. But there's a plus or minus 15 degrees where it doesn't do anything. So there's just kind of a default distance, and then when you turn, it starts to, when you get to more extreme angles, it starts to shoot out from your hand.
Awesome.
But on there's a bunch of six DOF headsets that will still have three DOF controllers. This is not one of them. But on those ones, when you can move your head forward, it's not as important for you to be able to move your tool out. So
yeah.
I think we'll still leave it in, but we'll tone it down.
Awesome. Well, Nathan says that, you know, you're going to have artistic tools on three DOF headsets. Peter's.
You see, there is like a similar app that you just described on the Gear VR that I tried with also this very similar controller than to the Daydream. And it also can extend and go back, but the precision of it is not that good. I get your point about 6 degrees headsets. Totally right. If you can move your hand and move around the object, I would totally get it.
Right.
But if we just consider the Oculus Go as basically being a Gear VR, and as far as I understand, just a Gear VR headset.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Either I buy a very expensive phone, like a Pixel or an S8 from Samsung, and I can run proper VR on it. If I don't have the money, I buy a decent phone. Why would I get this $200 device?
Wait, this has nothing to do with phones. No. This is just an all-around headset.
Yeah, but that's my point. Why would you get it if you can just add a little bit more money and get a Daydream phone like the Axon?
Because
you can get for $150 more a phone that can.
What if you don't want to drain your
phone anyway?
What if you don't want to drain your phone's battery? You know, or just
that's a big one.
Yeah, it's a huge one.
And it is better. It has a higher resolution screen. The optics are supposedly incredible. I didn't get to try it, really? But
that's what I've heard as well.
John Carmack was raving about the optics on it. And because it's an all-in-one, it has better heat dispersion and there's fewer whatever, and so you get a little bit more power out of it.
Do you think it will sell well?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, I am less. So that's a very relative term. What does well mean?
Yeah,
I think it could easily sell 500,000 or something like that.
Really?
But over a year or whatever, and then it'll be obsolete. Hopefully,
honestly,
I want everything to be sixed off as soon as possible.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think my thoughts were that I was a little bit unimpressed at first, and I thought this would have made sense at last Oculus Connect if they had announced it then. You know, like, oh, like 2016 is around, everyone freaking out about the prices of VR headsets, and then suddenly, you know, Oculus puts out a $200 all-in-one headset, and then everybody's like, okay, this is fine. I wish that we were not still supporting 3DOF things moving forward, but it seems like even into 2018, we're going to have to. But I think the optics are very, very impressive from everyone that has tried it, that has said it's like, or suppose it's actually way better than the Rifts, in terms of screen door effect, and even FOV wise, it's apparently just as comparable as the Rift. And I think from what I could understand, digging a little bit into the display, it's the like Note 8 phone's display or an equivalent to that they're using, except I might be contradicting myself because it's an LCD display in the Oculus Go, not an OLED. Right. So I'll take that back. That actually should move us to our second topic of conversation. Yes. We'll come back to the Oculus Santa Cruz prototype, which there's a good amount of information on. But Valve. Where is the article? Valve is now supporting LCD displays for, you know, Steam VR, and they're actually recommending hardware manufacturers to pursue that as an alternative to OLED. This is news because I think even like 6 months ago, we would not have said that LCD displays would have been anywhere near what OLED, you know, has promised to give VR, especially in terms of low persistence and having that, you know, trailing object.
Right.
Whenever
ghosting.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So I guess they've made low persistent LCD displays. That's kind of the name of the game. If there's demand for it, China will make it and they'll somehow make it work. And so I think we talked about it during the Pimax 8K episode that we were covering. And now the Windows Mixed Reality, some of the Windows Mixed Reality headsets have it. Oculus even is using LCD displays. And I think it just opens up the market for like all these other display manufacturers, apart from Samsung, to jump into the game.
Yes. And very importantly, the prices of phones recently have, you know, gone up because there is a very high demand on the OLED panels. And that means that if you want to build a headset, you just can't source, unless you're Samsung or Apple, huge amounts of OLED displays. And if now LCD works,
that's a good point.
There's pretty LCDs out there that can also help the manufacturers just source the materials. And
That's a very good point, actually. Yeah, OLED is like super under strain from phone manufacturers, very much so Apple. I don't think anyone's going to get an iPhone X for like, or the iPhone 10 for like 2 or 3 months at least, from what I hear.
Yeah, yeah. My wife is really excited to be the poo, but I'm not an Apple user. So, but I do want to be the poo as soon as she gets that phone.
What do you mean the poo? What does that mean?
Be the poo.
Emoji.
Yeah. Oh, the poo, the animated face.
It's the only feature you get this phone for. Come on.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I mean, people ridicule that idea, but like inhabiting an emoji is, I think that will be really awesome. Is it worth $200 more? Maybe. I don't know.
Right.
I mean, it depends on how much time you spend with the selfie cam on.
Yeah.
I'm not big into that, but
here the millennials are these days.
Oh, there is actually a feature of this camera that we also right now are using in VR. So I have, like you hear my voice, but my face is not my face. In terms of privacy, just imagine you could chat with foreigners over your iPhone 10, but your face is dynamically one-to-one mapped to a character. That means it doesn't show your face, but at least a mimic. So it's some kind of level of anonymity that some apps could use.
Right.
The same way we are right now on Big Screen, right? Technically, we could be anonymous here.
So you would be looking at your phone, and then that's animating the character that you're using. Yeah, that could be actually interesting. I think we've said this before. With some streamers that use like cats as instead of a webcam, and then they're using some kind of face rig, kind of like animation systems. They can actually have a cat talking and smiling and emoting.
Awesome.
I think. I mean, it's funny that the technology of face shift, although the face shift technology that that Apple acquired is now being used to make poop talk.
Yeah.
And other things.
And other things.
yeah.
But it seems like all of iPhone's AR capabilities and their focus has switched from outwards more towards inwards, or at least, instead of the outward facing camera, now it's the selfie facing camera, which, I mean, it's cool, but it's not where people thought it was going to go. Let's not concentrate on Apple too much. So back to Oculus, back to Oculus Santa Cruz, talking a little bit about the four cameras that are around the front panel. So check this out. The week before Oculus Connect 4, there was a patent. There was a series of patents that were granted to Oculus. One of them being a shock mounted camera that was on the headset to do better tracking. And I read on it and then put it on my Twitter and just like with the pictures and stuff. And I was like, that's pretty interesting. And then a week later, they show off a headset with four of those all around. And they even showed a drop test where they dropped the headset on the ground and it the cameras survive because the cameras actually go inside. Even though they are 180 degree cameras that stick out, like they're protruding out of the headset, they've just made a mechanism so that they don't break. So I thought that was pretty neat that you can kind of keep up with what Oculus is working on by reading their patents, even though they won't be 100%.
And you'll see them a year after you always file the provisional and then keep it secret as long as possible.
Right.
But this headset is very promising because there have been reports that some powerful hardware is in it. At least no one knows what kind of processor it is, but it seems like it can definitely render way more than the smaller versions of Oculus Go.
And doesn't seem there, what do you know about it?
Almost a year out. It's almost a year out, so you should expect by then. Not a year out for developers to get it. So they could be just pushing way more power than they expect in order to anticipate what processors will be like a year from now.
So like a new Qualcomm, unreleased Qualcomm chipset that.
Right. And the phone GPUs are getting crazy, crazy gains. Still there's the CPUs, like all CPUs have stopped getting so many gains, but more cores, I guess.
Guess you have some interesting knowledge in this regard. So how did you decide that Daydream was like, how did you make Sculptor work on a Daydream phone?
We're using Unreal Engine, and we tried on phones, it automatically forces you to forward rendering, and then there's HDR and stuff. When we first got Sculptor VR to run, just to compile on Android and run, we were getting something like 6 frames per second, right? And so we had to turn off all the screen space effects, bloom, ambient occlusion, and then it got up to about like 30 frames per second, and then we had to figure out more things. Shadows had to go, and then we were able to run at the 60 is what Daydream runs at, but we could only do that with about 15,000 triangles on screen, which and in Sculptor VR you are creating tons of triangles, you know. You have to, and we have a whole LOD system that can cut it down a lot, but not as much as we needed. So what we did next is you can turn off HDR, and that then you can't do any screen space filtering or anything like that, which sucks a little bit, but that doubles the triangle output, and we're at 30,000, which was not still so far from enough. And we actually stripped out Unreal's renderer and wrote one simple shader to do all of the lighting, where we just pass in a direction vector for the sun, and we invented this weird like ambient occlusion where it's sampling, instead of sampling a texture, it's just computing a thing inside. And so there's reflections and metallic and glowing all mixed into this texture. And now we can do about 200,000 triangles in there. So,
wow.
So that now it feels good. Like on the Vive or Oculus on a PC, you're usually showing about a million triangles before it'll drop to 45 or maybe 2. It depends on your GPU and stuff. But on phone, we can be 4 times as aggressive with LODs, and it's still playable, and you can see, and then the things nearest to you are still in full detail and stuff. So the phone really does get a good experience, and a comparable experience to the PC. The battery, so does we actually, no, so we haven't had any issues, which is, and that's because we don't use the game thread like at all. This Sculptor VR is built to support 16 players and multiplayer. And so to do that, when you're playing single player, we had to bring down game thread to about 2 milliseconds on PC, and it's even less on. So one of your major cores on the phone is basically unused. And then the render thread is still taxed pretty heavily. And then the voxel threads are on minor threads. So when you're sculpting and the particles come in and stuff, that's not creating as much heat. So Sculptor VR doesn't really have a heat issue, and it can run, it eats your entire battery in about 3 hours. But
so as far as I understand right now, you basically don't have any complex physics occlusion going on. It's just rendering it, but not much.
I just realized something. I didn't even give a proper introduction to Sculptor VR. So why don't we? we're jumping around sure, a little bit. It's okay, but yeah, let's just get people caught up. Yeah,
we jumped straight into the tech.
That's okay.
The tech backend.
That's
fine.
Okay, so yeah, why don't you? Yeah, give us a little introduction on what Sculptor VR is.
Okay, well, Sculptor VR is a voxel Octree sculpting engine and application. And the reason I throw in Octree is it is really the main differentiator between Sculptor VR's engine and what all other voxel sculpting applications do. So like Oculus Medium has SDFs in a fixed size. In a fixed size block, signed distance field. So inside each little cube, instead of just storing on, off, and a color, you store your distance to the surface. And by looking at a bunch of cubes, 4 cubes near each other or 8 cubes near each other, you can get an approximate surface that goes through. And that's how Oculus Medium gives you smooth sculpting.
So that's that's an alternative to polygons.
Yeah, except that they still use polygons and we still use polygons, but the real data is stored in voxels, and if you could directly render these voxels and get the same performance, that would be incredible, and there are people that are pushing on that front, but we're not one of them, and to my knowledge, Medium isn't one of them either. But you can still just from the voxels, it's called meshing, and you create you create the triangles, and then you send those to the GPU, and what the GPU is still rendering is triangles. So that's why it's useful to be in Unreal Engine. Unreal Engine handles all of our rendering, and it gives us the incredible blueprints and that stuff, you know. But then the entire voxel engine, all of the creation and the changes and the physics that we do in the voxels is all built from scratch.
So, well, I mean, you're talking a little bit about how Unreal can handle this. What's the main differentiator between, if you wanted to do this in Unity, it would be harder to do that because you don't have like as much access to the source engine, or not the source engine, but the source code of the engine?
Yeah, so we actually started in Unity, and the first version you probably tried on Steam when it was developers only was a Unity version of Sculptor VR that I had hacked together in a few months, and then just threw it out, and then we couldn't get very good performance because the way Octrees work is. For really technical reasons, it's kind of the worst case for C#. You're following pointers a lot, and C# needs to make pointer following safe, and so it's doing a lot of checks and stuff like that.
Can you maybe quickly explain what octatrees are?
Oh, yeah.
You said voxel, octatree, that engine, right? Yeah, that's what Sculptor is.
Yeah. So an octatree is like any grid, except you can always subdivide. So you have blocks, and each block can be broken into 8 blocks. It's hard to maybe I can try and draw. Should we get this intense?
Right, yeah.
And then in all dimensions, right? So you basically can go in the four, like up, down, left, right, forward, backward, and
right. So if you've got there's no undo.
There's a
The audience, he's right now using the powerful ability of VR to draw something in space.
Yeah, we take advantage of that too. Right, but so you've got one block.
He's drawing a cube. It's blue.
Peter, can you record this actually? Or
how do I do it?
From your perspective? Yeah,
I got it actually.
You got it?
Yeah.
Wait, I can maybe.
Too late. There's a selfie cam here.
Nice. Oh, was I doing this outside of the view?
No, you're good.
All right, so every single block that you create in Sculptor VR can be broken apart into these 8 little blocks, and so the reason that's kind of awesome and important is we only need to make exactly as much detail as is necessary to represent. Wow, that makes everything blue. You guys didn't pick up that I switched to red in the interior?
No, I guess it's only showing blue color.
Now is it red? No, always blue. Okay. Well, it's fine. So you break a cube up into 8 subcubes, and then even one of these 8 subcubes can then be broken up into 8 subcubes, right? Mm-hmm. And then one of these can be broken up, and then one of these can be broken up until you know, right here you have these cubes that are a millimeter in size, but you still have just massive landscapes. We give you 2 kilometers, 2 by 2 by 2 kilometers of space, and you can place single millimeter blocks. And in the new version, Those numbers get fudged a bit because we change from worlds to sort of sculptures. And
now you said that this is the worst case for C#. Why so?
C#, for let's see, in C#, you're usually let's see, gotta get this thing away. C# does a lot of things to make it a safe. It's garbage collected, and they prevent you, and they try not to let you work with pointers too directly and stuff. And that makes the language safe, makes it easier to code, but slows it down a little bit. And it's slowing it down in ways that don't matter in most applications. Mm. But our application is one where we get a huge slowdown. It was about a factor of 5 or something slower to write this in C# than in C++.
You could technically, and this is also a question why I'm asking, is because people sometimes decide Unity versus C#. You could argue that in Unity you technically could have written your code in a C++ library and just bind it.
This is a thing that I'll say programmers should all know the pain of trying to incorporate C++ libraries and bring them together and write C++ code and compile it into DLLs. You have to use CMake. You have to bring these things together. You have to like figure out how they work together to try to get anything done. And it is a nightmare and I want to die. Unreal Engine gives you absolutely everything you need. We have one third party library that we've pulled into Unreal Engine, and that's for FBX export. Everything else is already built into the engine, and incredibly, you download the source code, you run one bat file, and then you click the compile button, and Unreal works. It's the only way I've ever enjoyed writing C++ code. It makes it so easy. So we get all of the performance of C++ without my biggest headache. And then the other reason that we needed to be in Unreal Engine is, if we were making these meshes and stuff in C#, and then we're transferring it to the engine, we have to marshal the code. And I think that has to be done on the game thread and send it to the engine, which is written in C++. And maybe there's APIs where we can directly send C++ types. But it would have been in Unreal Engine, I just open up the code, figure out what the renderer is expecting, build meshes of exactly that type, and send them over so that we can do it all asynchronously and minimize the overhead on the game and render thread and push maximum performance.
Yeah, is there any point that you regret on moving away from Unity to Unreal, or anything you're missing, or do you think Unreal is good to go? I don't miss anything.
There are. I mean, we still don't have mixed reality in Sculptor VR. It's finally enabled in 4.17, but there's not like built-in things. So a lot of these. So Unity got so much more support from indies, and even like Valve that does a bunch of stuff for Unity. The Valve's reason for that was they saw that indies were using Unity, and Unreal was larger teams, and larger teams don't need as much help from them. Sculptor VR is not a large team. There are two of us. And so we can't make any of these tools. So we make a voxel engine and we let Epic basically do everything else. And all we really have time to do is a voxel engine and the interface around it. And so in Unity, you have so many more packages you can pull in and things you can just take. And that would be awesome. But it is not worth the loss of performance. And then also Unreal's multiplayer is so incredible. It being built right into the engine, being able to simulate two players on one computer by clicking a button and package to a dedicated server with one click and stuff that strips out the renderer and all these things. That I don't know if we ever would have gotten multiplayer to be as good if we built this in Unity.
So that was also a feature that was added, I believe, a few months after launch.
That's true. Yeah.
But recently, I think I don't know if you've announced yet. Have you announced actually you totally have announced. We were just looking at the article on Upload. But Sculptor is moving from the blocky worlds that it's been known to create into now the smooth realm. And that's where sine, distance, fields are coming in.
Sine distance fields is what Oculus uses, and it's something similar to what we have been using so far. All of our beta users and all the things that have been built so far were when we were using sine distance fields plus gradients. So we actually had Hermite fields, which is a little bit more complicated, but it was necessary in our case because of the multi-scale octrees. We really needed more information in each block. But we're switching to something else that I'm not sure that I'm totally ready to talk about, but it ends up outperforming sine distance fields by a factor of 3 in computation and memory, a factor of 5 when saving to disk, and the meshing is about equally difficult but it's also a more intuitive thing. But it's still sort of a work in progress. I got it to the point where I could convert from one to the other. It looked as good. It actually looks a little bit better because this new format does a better job at generating LODs, the reduced detail geometry. So it looks better. It has less data and it finally runs great.
Wow.
Um, But there's like, there's one more. The when you break apart a solid block into the 8 subchunks, you just copy. You know, if this was a blue block, then all of the 8 children are blue blocks, and then you can make changes to the children instead. Mm-hmm. But right. when it's a distance value, when you break it into 8, it's not going to be the same distance. Some are closer and some are further. And so this subdivision is made easier by that Hermite data, but it's also, and it's made easier by our new format, but we need to like smoothly interpolate between neighbors, or else you get regions of local flatness. And anyway, so there's one big major problem that I'm hoping to solve today after we end this show. And then I think it'll be ready, and wow, we can finally build up to release. We still need to make a trailer as well.
Dude, that's bad.
You know, a man for this.
Yeah, so here's
who could do a trailer.
Yeah. So Sculpture VR has been sort of a world builder in the past. So this is somebody you can still build worlds in the new smooth voxels. And interestingly, you can like in here, there's a whole like throne room and weird art on the walls. If you go into this, there's a little face back there. If you dive down into its mouth, there's buried treasure and stuff. So the smooth has this great, incredible, range of scale. But no longer looks like blocks.
I want to emphasize that point again, is that Sculptor, as far as I know, has probably the biggest scale variation that I've seen in any VR app. So that to be able to zoom out to, you know, god size to go down to like ant size. I mean, you know, you have that feature in Tiltbrush, but I don't think it's nearly as much variation.
The one that does have as much or maybe a little bit more scale is Quill. Quill does that.
How does Quill render anything? Is that basic?
Quill, most of what you're doing is you're drawing sort of like these tubes in space. But interestingly, the tubes all are sort of spatially partitioned and located, and so you can draw a face and then sort of carve into it, and they each point along the tube has a alpha and opacity, and so you really get, Quill does a really good job of feeling like something in between Tilt Brush with lines in space and Medium with volumes. It's living in this weird mix of being volumetric but also line drawings. Quill is a really cool, I like it a lot, but Sculptor VR feels more like Oculus Medium, except with this infinite zoom. Not infinite. It's about a 10,000x zoom or 20,000 or something.
And
the GIF is right below this.
Yes. So this GIF will be posted on our Twitter and Facebook page, probably on the episode. Yeah. If I don't put a picture or the video of you drawing your Octa. What do you call it? The Octa squares?
Octree.
Yes.
Octree, yeah.
So this is really neat. I mean, you're zooming. Is this a 10,000x zoom?
This is a 10,000x zoom. So
you can see the LOD.
What was a single pixel now becomes the entire screen, and then you zoom in into a tenth of that or something.
So that blue screen was a pixel, and he's zooming into that blue screen is now the backboard to like, it's like 1,000 foot tall screen that he's standing in front of and editing a smaller mesh. Right. Yeah, we can look at this GIF all day. It's really, really neat. So, I mean, it sounds like this is an extremely powerful tool, and like obviously art and just kind of world creation is one application of it. But like in your head, like what are the really interesting use cases of like having a really powerful voxel engine entail?
Well, so there are a lot of things that you can do with voxels that you can't do very easily with meshes, because you have this interior and exterior very clearly defined. But there's some extra things that you can do with an Octree solid representation. So all of physics is done with Octrees. Every physics is built around this Octree system, and but it's instead of it being blocks, it's octrees are used to just create regions. So if you want to have 10,000 balls that are all potentially able to collide with each other, you don't want to have every single ball check every single other ball. That the expense would be insane.
Right.
So instead, they partition the balls into a bunch of octree nodes, and then you only really need to check if you collide with the balls in your octree node or one of your neighbors if you're close enough. And so that brings it from 10,000 times 10,000 or 10,000 times 9,999 tests down to 10,000 times like 10 or something. So it can save you a factor of 100 with these sorts of things. And we get all of that for free. Everything that we do can be spatially located. We can have physics in the world. We can be testing collisions. We can do lighting in this thing. So the octree is one of the big things. And then the solid voxels gives you this ability carve and create, and you can encode interiors so that as you're carving into a watermelon, you get the red inside and stuff. Go ahead.
Do you think just using your Voxel Engine 4 Sculpture VR, or do you actually want to license it, sell it out, enable more applications with it? So are you just building it for your own purposes, or because what you have been describing is awesome, do you also consider, I don't know, licensing it out, or what's the business strategy maybe?
Well, we're still getting, you know, building it ourselves and making things with it ourselves. But if other people show interest and want to use it, that is awesome. I'd be happy to license it. I probably for non-creative applications, we'll maintain that use case. Sure. But
ideally,
we ourselves have actually made some games using it. So So one game that we made was we called it Gravity Architect. And one of the cool things about octrees is every time you place at the bottom level, you have this super detailed thing. You also have all of these reduced detail things all the way up. And so we were able to make a game where you have complete local crazy warped gravity, where every single particle is experiencing gravity, and you can like just smoothly place and it's updating a gravity field, and these particles are orbiting around bone shapes and yeah. Stuff. And then the game was to the particles start in orbit around a planet or something, and you need to add some mass that get the particles to escape the planet's orbit and then travel through some goal across this map or something. And so it's just like this gravity game that was fun. And there's no way to do that without this voxel engine that gives you the LODs and the ability to sample with as much detail as you need.
So voxels are actually even more important for physics than they are for even just visually representing like 3D objects.
Yeah, the octree is important for physics, and we have voxels in our octree.
Okay, that makes more sense.
Yeah,
you could take this as an example of like cut files, like when you design some kind of engines or automotive parts, you usually have them in the cut files where you have NURBS, right, which are basically describing the mathematical shape. And the process right now would be you take the NURBS and you transform them to basically triangles, right? So you have to.
Right.
Goes through the destructive step, but if you could somehow transform the NURBS into the voxels, and as far as I understand, it is technically possible, and then have powerful GPUs being able to render directly voxels, this would be awesome. Because you could like zoom in unlimited, you could interact with those objects, you could change them, and then basically go back at some point, I guess. But so far, there is this destructive process of taking NURBS into the meshes, and you can't go back. Voxels would be really awesome.
NURBS to triangles, NURBS to voxels would also still be a destructive process as well.
But I think you would have I don't remember. You have some.
It depends on how much you can encode NURBS into the voxels. That way, the voxels are more like a. More like a partitioning of your engine's analytical representation. So I've thought about that, and I think that it would be a really cool direction to go. But But I think that there are a lot of really awesome places to go next in creation too. Like, so one of the things that I'm really excited about is having a solid representation, and this octree representation gives us really fast pathfinding throughout, within voxels or outside voxels. And that's useful for lighting and things like that. But I think it will also give us extremely good bone weights after putting a skeleton into a mesh. So I think that we can use this to, you can once you've sculpted say a creature or something, you can then insert a skeleton with these bones, and then the automatically generated bone weights will be really, really good. And then you can just, within VR, insert these things, hit a button to calculate, because it won't be able to calculate on the fly. I think it'll take about a second instead of a 90th of a second. So it'll still run in the background. You're not going to be dropping frames, but we won't do it every frame. You have to click a button once. And then you'll be able to just grab that thing you sculpted by the hand and lift them in the air, and they'll ragdoll around.
Wow.
And so that's what we really want to get to next. After we finally push this update, then we're going to try and get it on as many platforms as possible. Mm-hmm. PSVR has been like in our sights for so long, and we still haven't gotten there.
User base. I mean,
yeah.
And I think the fact that you guys have already, you are supporting a mobile VR, you know, headset, I think puts you at a really strategic location moving forward. Cause like a lot of things, actually maybe going back to Oculus, the Santa Cruz, we actually don't know exactly where it fits into the whole ecosystem. Is it, you know, hardware wise, it's like somewhere in between a Rift and a Go, but like software wise, like what app store is it going to actually support? Is it going to be the mobile side, or is it going to be all PC side? And if future PC things, you know, are they going to have to downscale somewhat to the Go, or it's not the Go, the Santa Cruz? I think the fact that you have something working on Daydream, like, gives you that huge range.
Right. And we actually have a bunch of sliders that can hit every point in between, where if you have this much more power, then we give you this many more triangles and this much, you know, this much more lighting and stuff.
That's an advantage that only you have, because you have written your own basically voxel engine, and you have put thought into it. When I think about the ecosystem itself, like, I mean, you're a genius, you can definitely do it, but can the average game designer who basically didn't thought so much about how to represent voxels and stuff, but just more about the game design, will he be able, or she be able, to actually have this scalable experiences? Because I have myself like tried to optimize Unity stuff for Gear VR, and then sometimes run it on a PC, and it's not as easy if you don't know what you're doing. And I'm pretty sure that not a lot of people are prepared to have this scalable world.
Yeah, mobile development is definitely harder than PC development. You can be so wasteful and just throw things into a scene and it'll just happen to work most of the time, you know. And you don't worry that, oh, you accidentally left 50,000 triangles on this coffee mug or something. But you put one coffee mug like that. That's me and my photogrammetry
scans. Just like throw all the millions of polygons.
Yeah,
it's totally fine.
But let's remember the episode about the gun shoes, gun roses, and hot dogs.
Gun shoes,
hot dogs,
H3 horseshoes, and hand grenades.
He was describing that basically the whole CPU power is being taken by simulating two guns, and we are talking about a desktop CPU. I'm not sure if this will ever run on a scaled down version, right?
So, super exciting. That's really, really hard to believe, but I mean, well, so it's possible. So like, in Epic broke down Robo Recall really well and talked about all of the things they had to do to make it run with 30 of these robots on the screen. And when they first started, it was insane. Every single one of them had 30 places you could grab. They had all these physical components. And so when they're running around, it's updating these overlaps and moving and all these things. And so they can only have like four of the robots on screen at a time. And that's Anton's situation right now with H3, is the guns have so many moving parts that are all overlapping and intersecting and stuff, that even just moving the gun around has to update 50 components in space. And so you need to have more guns than that. What he would need to do is is only make those components touchable when your hand is very nearby. And you just need to very aggressively turn off components that you can't easily interact with within a few frames. And so it's only when your hand gets really close to one gun that you start to turn on the interactivity of each of these components. And so I think if he spent a lot of time working on that, that he could get it to be a multiplayer game with eight people, and so you got 16 right. guns instead. And it's just that only one gun at a time ever has all those components on. But then if he also did that, then he could have it running on mobile. I think that he could get it just good enough to run on, say, Oculus's 6 DOF. Anton is right. hardcore against 3 DOF stuff.
Right.
I think. No, he is. I don't want to put too many words in. I don't know him that well.
I think the whole two-hand interactivity is like his bread
right,
and butter.
Right. It's a pretty magic leap up from 3 DOF for sure.
Heyo. That's fascinating. This came up. And I guess maybe you can add a little bit of flavor on top in terms of, I guess, 3D representations and voxels. Where does light field, and I know it's a big word, kind of fit into this whole scheme what are your thoughts in terms of that entire word, and does that, you know, is that relevant to your interests? Is it something that needs more time?
Well,
is it all hype words?
So right now, so light field is closer to a rendering technology than it is, a data structure for, so we don't do all that much unique for rendering. We generate triangles and then we let Unreal Engine figure out how to render them. What I'm hoping is that we can continue to generate triangles, pass them off to an engine, and it will then do light field rendering for us. But it is definitely possible that there will be some optimizations that you can make with direct voxel rendering that you can't do with triangles. So maybe there's some overlap there. I'm not really.
There's one thing that your application could totally use light field for. Imagine, and my colleague Misha has been right now.
Who?
Last week, I think, on the. Misha, it's a colleague from me, so shout out to him. He was on the GTC conference from NVIDIA.
Okay.
And they've been talking a lot about VR and light field and what their ideas, and as far as I have understood, he's also working on his own light field saving method for his PhD or something, so he can understand that. He explained it to me very basic. We could use light field, we could stream the light field data directly into the headset. And then when you imagine that the latency problem of a remote server rendering the picture, sending it to your headset, is just, the latency is just too much. But sending light fields would reduce the latency because light fields have more information in them. So technically, you just send the compressed light field to the headset that you, for example, render sculpture VR at in some kind of enormous resolution, even with more voxels or with more triangles, and you just stream it to the headset. The headset knows what to do with it because the hardware is there, and you can look around even though the data is not yet processed on the server. So you kind of send already a perspective or from many sides to the headset, and then you technically could render it on the servers, and then, for example, mobile could like be full blown up on scale with all the effects, because you're just basically streaming directly the light field that the person will later see on the headset. And this is like potentially the future.
That works well for static geometry. So it's like when you bake light maps, you can bake a light field and send this baked thing, and then you can move around without having to recompute. But as soon as there's a thing moving, which is when things get, static worlds get really boring really quickly, so you have to solve objects moving within a volumetric light field.
If you consider that some people stream games already, like when you click with a mouse or interact with your hands, the latency there can be a little bit higher than the latency from your head moving. So it's okay maybe to have the latency of 30, 40, 50 milliseconds of you interacting and then the world changing, but what causes the motion sickness is when you move your head and it doesn't move.
Oh, okay. I see. So you're still, you're suggesting you're sending every frame.
Yes. Yes.
But there's just a 40 millisecond latency. So another thing to think about is 5G wireless is reported to only have the, I'm stealing this directly from Jared at Pluto. Yeah. I don't know if you know those guys, but Jared would not stop talking about 5G at OC4. And there's a 1 millisecond latency is all that's introduced by the wireless connection. Wow. And they also store these data centers right there because they're sort of decentralizing data centers and stuff like that. So you could have these things computed right at this tower and then streamed to you, and it would really only introduce a 1 millisecond latency. And so we might not have to worry as much about that 40 milliseconds induced by bouncing off of a server that's in San Francisco or something. But who knows? That's it's interesting.
I mean, another vector, we have like the news open about TPcast now supporting Oculus. It's also an approach, right, where you at least take the port away from the headset and still have the powerful machine rendering it, but send it over the TPcast wireless thingy.
Right.
Maybe
right.
You could kind of combine it with 5G at some point. And then
these hybrid systems with enough local processing to, process the visual side, at least your headset movement, and then leaving the really hard tasks for cloud-based processing.
And I really see the Santa Cruz prototype going in that direction, because why would Oculus, release something in between, like the VR Go headset from them and the Oculus are kind of both products? Why would they have something in between? Because they most likely know how the technology works, like in the tests that they did, and see maybe the potential to now be 5G light field connected, and maybe the headset isn't
that. Maybe 5G light field
connected. Conspiracy. That's
maybe Rift 2 and Santa Cruz are the same thing.
Yeah.
And Santa Cruz can just receive wireless signals, and so you can have a desktop give you better graphics if you want, or it has onboard processing.
I think that was something that
into your brain.
I think that's something that Intel might have been experimenting with in terms of this hybrid based approach of doing some kind of processing on board and then getting most of the actual beefy processing coming from the computer that's in the room. But I think in terms of strategy, like moving forward, the Oculus Santa Cruz is gonna be their main platform. Like that, it's not the in between. It's not the awkward child. Like I think that's for sure gonna be there, because that's where
pixels.
Well, think about it. They don't own the PC. They don't own the PC. They don't own the OS that's on the PC. They don't even they haven't even scratched at owning the VR side of PC, because Steam right now is still pushing along, and every other headset is starting to support Steam instead of Home, which that wasn't their plan. But yes, it's going to have to be their main strategy, and everything's going to be based around that, even including Rift 2, if that ever comes around, which I honestly, I don't know if that's a thing, but
I honestly think it's going to be a better experience than PC VR. There's a blind spot right behind your head, I guess, and I'm not supposed to say that.
No.
Well, anyway, there's a little blind spot. No, there was another thing I was about to say that I wasn't supposed to say yet.
we'll cut that out.
So it's not. Probably. No, it's fine. It's fine. I didn't say it actually. So, but but it does really good. All of the places that you usually put your hands, it apparently tracks it, and all people whose opinion I respect, like Ian wrote an article about his experience and stuff. He said it was awesome, and he laid down on the floor and he did a bunch of things trying to break it, and it just works. So, and I think that even though it will have less graphical capability and less compute, that the most important things are going to be easier to put on, easier to use, and like there's I don't choose to play VR more than some percentage of my time, because it's a lot of effort. And if you have a thing that you can just put on your head and it's good to go and it's not doing anything else, I think that'll be awesome.
Big screen to go, I would totally buy this headset.
I think
just put a headset on and be in a social room with other people and have right now the same experience as now, I would totally sold.
Yeah, I think that they're pushing towards current mobile platforms. Is that public knowledge? I don't know.
I don't know, but I still want to shame Oculus for the fact that I cannot I really want to the public that I cannot hang around with someone who has an Oculus and I have a Gears. I've promised it.
That aspect of things are definitely have fallen through.
That's
through
crazy. Cracks. I didn't realize that. Like Sculptor VR is cross-platform. A Daydream user can jump in with a Rift or Vive user and they can play together. We're not on Gear yet.
You're two people.
And we actually don't. I know.
<You're> right. I'm just saying, you know, and you have other things to do, right?
Yeah.
You technically, you know, have to figure out other things in your life than just having the multiplayer support.
Okay, yeah. But there's a caveat. We haven't figured out cross-platform voice yet. But we just recently we have a lead.
That's funny.
We have a lead. We think we're gonna get it.
Why is that the bottleneck?
Skype in the background.
We're not gonna use Skype. We're gonna use this other thing, I think. But
RTC.
Why was that a problem? In Unreal Engine, they build a bunch of different audio SDKs, and it's per platform, and they just do not talk to each other. There's the PlayStation voice, there's the Oculus voice, there's the Steam voice, and there's a LAN voice. And we tried to hack the LAN voice so that no matter what platform you're on, it thinks that you're playing a LAN game and uses LAN voice. And that's what we use right now to talk between Steam and Rift. But it is not meant for online bandwidth and stuff. Right. So it cuts out, it's bad. So we're finally going to integrate our second plugin into Sculptor VR, and it'll be a multi-platform voice thing that is well integrated into the engine. So soon we should have voice fixed. Yeah.
Awesome.
The voice communication between people is like one of the most crucial.
Yeah, no, you're definitely true.
And also not that size heavy, right? Like audio files are not big. They don't require if you're streaming games and you're streaming voxels between a Daydream and a Vive,
voxels are smaller than audio.
Are they?
I can talk about the sizes. So like with the format that got that Zoom, This world was stupidly big when we did full SDF or Hermite fields. Well, to me, it seems stupidly big, but maybe when you think about it being a whole world in details, but it was about 300 megabytes when you saved it to disk, which to me is insane. But
that's fair.
But I just recently with this stuff that I'm not quite ready to talk about, but I converted this world and saved it again, and it's 62 megabytes.
Yeah.
Wow.
Which is like
it's a huge problem, right? You know,
yeah. This is like an end of you don't really want a world more detailed than this, because it's just like at that point it's better to combine multiple things together and stuff. You know, so this is just like a fully detailed end of life world is now only tens of megabytes instead of hundreds, and that's a huge win. But what we actually stream
is also a huge advantage of the voxel system, because you don't save huge meshes.
Right. Well, yeah. So if you export this, it's something like 20 million triangles. When you're in game, it's not that many triangles because it's generating LEDs. But if you export it'll export it all at full res.
Right.
It's 20 million triangles. It'll be way bigger than 60 million.
LOD, maybe we should quickly explain what LOD and level of detail actually means. And I think when you could quickly summarize it, what does LOD mean?
You can see it in this GIF. Yeah. So you can see when it gets big. Mm-hmm. If you watch the spaceman's body, you'll see it be this low res kind of chunky thing, and then higher res smoother surfaces pop in. So
the LOD, when you drive in a new city and it just clunky and then starts to load or in
game, right. So it's this way of you reduce how much visual information is there when things are far away, and as you get closer, you draw it. And the way that most game engines do it is they have it loaded in memory and then they just switch depending on how close you are and how much you need. But we have to do something a little bit more complicated, because if we load all of that in memory and store it on the GPU, it crashes. So we have to generate the triangles as needed. So there's actually 60 milliseconds or something. So there's enough where for a couple frames, you see, if you zoom in really quick, then for a couple frames, you'll see.
Are you basically doing live tessellation?
Yeah.
You're doing like, not live, but like, on demand, right?
Basically, right. Wow. Right. Right. That's but impressive. We should
talk about the podcast. Like after the podcast, not maybe today, but maybe during the week. I am
you're just like, wait.
The business part.
Sure.
Nathan, so in terms of the LOD, I think is comparable to how Google Earth VR does it, except actually this is way, way quicker than what you'd get on Google Earth.
Google Earth is streaming this stuff from a server. So I actually gave a little presentation showing the smooth, and I showed an export and said, you know, look at how it's 6 million triangles, but in game it's only 1.2, so we're doing a lot to reduce it. And then someone who had built the Google Earth VR thing came up to me and said, you know, it's funny that you talked about reducing 6 million to 2, because we have a trillion triangles, and we can only send you a couple million. Wow. They're doing it almost, I mean, I don't know exactly what they're doing, but they're probably doing basically the same thing we're doing. So in Sculptor VR, in a single Octreon Sculptor VR, you can theoretically have, it's two to the 60th, which is a million, billion, trillion, quadrillion, pentillion. you can have a pentillion voxels in there. And so if you had really, really pushed this where there's the maximum detail everywhere on every surface, then Sculptor VR would still generate only 2 million triangles. But then the entire scene would have, Google Earth level trillions of triangles or quadrillions or whatever. But with a caveat that currently, all of the voxel data needs to fit in your RAM. So you can't just keep going forever because it'll overflow your RAM and then you won't be able to load. But this world uncompressed in your RAM is only about a gigabyte. So it still runs even on PlayStation and on Daydream.
Yeah, 1 gigabyte is totally doable.
MinSpec for VR is 8 gigabytes of RAM?
No.
Or are we talking about VRAM?
You're speaking about VRAM, right?
No. This is how much RAM, how much your CPU RAM is used. The GPU RAM we only use such a tiny amount because we only store the triangles that are on screen right now.
True.
We're not really worried about GPU RAM. It's just but because we're not storing any of these things on the GPU and we're not generating more LODs than you need. You get that little bit of delay as you're zooming. So if you can zoom in faster than the LODs can switch.
Could you technically set it more aggressively, like in some kind of versions later? Could there be an option?
Yeah.
I have more VRAM, just give it to me.
Right. So that's actually what we used to do. We've gone through so many iterations on this engine, and if you go through like the update notes on Steam, you'll see all the times where I say, oh, it's twice as fast, and then I say, oh, it's five times as fast, and then I say, oh. And so overall, the thing that we've settled on is the highest performance thing that I've been able to find so far, and then like I mentioned, this new file format then gives you another factor of 5 roughly or something. So it's like I keep finding these large factors of speed, but having all of the LODs built and ready to flip on the GPU overtaxed the CPU, it overtaxed the RAM, it overtaxed the GPU's memory, and so this is overall more performance, but there are certain situations where, yes, you could optimize it a different way and get better results for that situation. But we're trying we don't have the resources to push in all directions. So we're just making it really good for this one thing, I guess.
That is awesome. When can people expect to get their hands on this new engine?
Well, our target launch date was yesterday.
You were going to sleep this one night, and then you're like, wait, everything I've done, I'm going to redo in a completely different way. Yeah,
exactly. That's almost exactly it, except really I was sitting in the airport waiting for my flight to OC4 and was like, I was talking with Brandon while we're waiting for the plane. We almost missed this plane, by the way, because of this conversation. We were the last ones to enter, and they were like, oh, we were about to close the door. Well, anyway, I was like, You know, I wonder if we really need to store all of this data out into the air and into the surface. I mean, we really don't care. We're just trying to do, maybe we, there's a way we can, and then a week and a half later, after I've gone a little crazy, we have this 5x reduction, you know?
Wow.
And so, but it's not quite ready. So it's going to be sure. 2 weeks, not a week and a half or something, but so it caused a delay. So now, hopefully in a week or two, we'll still be able to launch. I need to push this update and make sure some artists try it and we didn't totally break everything, you know, because there's a serious risk that we're breaking everything when you rewrite an entire engine.
That's totally fair.
Could possibly go wrong.
No, I mean, it's not an entire engine. It's just like the actual voxels are a completely different data format. And then the structure of the tree is completely different. And so it's almost every function gets touched, but they get touched in these little ways that lead to a large change.
Is there a way people can get notified that this is happening apart from, like, I guess, obviously go to Steam, buy it on Steam. We'll put the link up there. I think it's $19.99 currently.
Right.
That's right. And how about on Daydream, actually? Same.
On Daydream, it's only $5 because people don't pay for things more expensive than $5. Yeah. Yeah, and you have limited capabilities as well. So like in the PC version, you get this copy and paste tool, and you can copy a thing and then paste it in a bunch of orientations and stuff. But that really requires full sixdoff. We can't do our trick because you need simultaneous orientation and position when doing an oriented copy paste. And there are a bunch of other tools but like for a sphere, you really only need position. Rotating a sphere doesn't change anything. And then we, with cubes, we lock the cube to where the head is looking, and then position it with the hand trick with this key turn. So we limit your tool set on Daydream, and it's not as good of an experience. I'm surprised every time we get a review, people seem to like it. I'm so spoiled by sixdoff. Like I started off already with a DK2 and I use Leap Motion for hands. Right. So okay. Leap Motion, yeah. And so I've been doing sixdoff head and hands since the beginning of my VR experience. And so to step back and go to Daydream and 3DOF after, it was really painful for me. And I guess it's not that bad of an experience. People really do seem to like it.
That is awesome to hear. I'm sure there aren't that many creative tools on Daydream, and you know, this is probably one of the most advanced ones.
I mean, you can do a lot in it, but I think that most people who buy it on Daydream also have it on Vive, and then they use it as like a second player can go in and fly hang gliders around in the world, and just like you can hang out in the same space. So I think it's a lot of people in the same house playing together. Cross-platform.
Yeah, but this is what makes people buy it, actually. Because if I have, you know, one application on my computer, but I can't share it with my Gear VR or my Daydreams that I'm soon going to get, you know, why would I get it? But if I have this chance, again, the social factor, I am usually too lazy to just play all day myself VR games. I talk about it all day about VR, and I'm so much into the topic. Mm. If I could get a friend or two friends of mine, just go quickly in, I have some headsets here, go get the shitty ones, I'm the master of my own Oculus, you know? It's a good setting.
Yeah, that's it's really great. Neat. Nathan, what other ways can people follow Sculptor?
We have a Twitter, and it's at Sculptor VR, but it's me talking. Yep. But I've restricted it to like business, so it's become my personal. I don't have a personal anymore. I am just Sculptor, you know. So I have no private voice, only the Sculptor VR voice online. So that's the best way. And then, you know, we post stuff on Steam and we're honestly not very good at social media. I think that the technology we've been building is getting to the point where it's pretty mature and good, and I can spend a little bit more time promoting and a little bit less time improving soon.
Your fan base could just, you know, or people who listen to the podcast, get the app, do something, or someone share it on Twitter. What's your hashtag?
That's a great.
I made great.
That's
stuff.
A great question.
At Sculpture VR.
Yeah, you can add it. Most people at, and then some people have been doing like a hashtag made with Sculpture, but that's a little. Nice. Yeah. So,
we'll
so
say
like Chuck
it.
Has been putting that hashtag.
Do the social media for him so he can focus on the more technical stuff. Because
yeah, awesome. Please.
More optimization.
That's right.
Yeah, and next the next things that we want to do on the creative front is, I think, going to be a VR first. There's this really low hanging fruit of the next step after you model a thing is to rig and animate it. And nobody's done, and people have done animation once you already have a rigged thing, you know, to Tavori and Mindshow and whatever. But but I think that going from zero to fully rigged and animated is something we can achieve in 6 months or less. And that is going to be, I think that for the first time you can own the entire process from start to finish, and our weights will work across LODs and stuff too, the way I'm thinking of it. So you'll have a game ready asset with that can shrink down to enough triangles to exist in any game and look great and stuff.
It's
out of Sculpture VR.
It's kind of crazy that the fact that VR has like such high requirements for just running things is now starting to spill over into just the general 3D world, general game world, that, you know, you're going to, because of these constraints, that's forced developers to think really creatively in terms of how do you create things that are very, very efficient. It sounds like your tool is exactly in that realm, especially with this rigging that you're thinking
about. Yeah. I mean, there are these handcrafted retopologized meshes do a better job than Sculpture VR's engine. So we don't get the most, but we do a really good job. So you can take something that's,
give yourself
that's,
credit,
that's over a million triangles, and you can shrink it down to 15,000 triangles, and it looks very much like itself. But if you use other people's tools, you can get it down to 4,000 triangles, and then you bake these normal maps, and you bake and all these things, and then it looks almost full detail. And I think we can get there eventually, but we're not there yet. And so it's automation can't know what's important. So like these octrees are dumb. They don't know that, oh, it would be better if I combine these nodes. It only can combine its children nodes. And so you combine up the tree, you can't combine sideways, you know? So there's a limit to how good we can do with our format. But we can do really damn good. And the ease of creation makes it, oh God, this trailer is so old.
Yeah, but I actually can't believe that we are right now sitting in VR and I'm seeing your virtual avatar who's watching a screen on which there is a trailer from the game you programmed where there was shortly before your avatar in the VR doing it. So you have a virtual avatar watching right now your virtual avatar recorded in VR being on a screen while we are in VR.
All right, guys, we're getting a little too mindful. I feel like we go through this every week. We're like, I can't believe we're doing this in VR, guys.
No, but he was watching himself playing VR while being in VR.
Right.
I want to help. We're running low on time, but I want to help finish up some of the news that we totally skipped over.
Whoops.
It's all good. I wanted to jump into this. The Windows Mixed Reality headsets are officially launched. Nice. So I think pre-orders will slowly start to receive their orders. Road to VR has a great headset review on the Acer Windows VR headset. I like that they didn't call it the Mixed Reality headset, at least on Road to VR.
Yeah, it's lovely.
It's literally in the title. So take a look at that. Adobe at their conference this week announced the launch of their VR editing tools, and so that's the 360 editing software that's happening inside of Adobe Premiere Pro. I was trying to use this yesterday with the new Gear 360 camera that I have, but for some reason Premiere wasn't wanting to read the stitched video from Gear, so I don't know. I'm have to deal with codec issues. Which is really fun. So I'll get back to that hopefully soon. I'm starting to do a lot more drone 360 stuff, which I didn't know I would get into, but I guess here I am.
Adobe also showed a a thing where they take a 360 video and then they try to create a depth map from it. So you can actually move around, and it looked nauseating to me, but I wasn't in the headset. I'd have to, but you move around, and then these things are positionally located based on depth estimates. And in certain situations it looked good, but then certain situations, like the road was like wobbling. But it's a great start.
I remember seeing the research behind that for a while ago, and it was just like from a single image, you know, estimating depth maps from it. And now I guess they actually are starting to implement it. I don't know if it is integrated into the current Premiere. Yeah,
I think they were just showing off research, and it's still not ready for it to be in our hands.
Technically, if you look how Pixel 2 does it, right? They have like two subpixels next to each other. If you take this camera that Samsung just released, there was also a news. I don't think they have it open, but Samsung finally released their badass 2 kilos, 360.
Silly named as Samsung Surround, I think.
It is silly named, but it's awesome in terms of it has like stereo 360 recording. And if technically you could combine this 360 stereo recording with those dual pixel design from the Pixel phone, you maybe could then combine it with this Premiere feature and make like super depth field stuff, whatever.
By the way, was it based on stereo video that they were doing the depth estimation, or was it from a mono camera?
I think That's a good question. I'm not sure.
Because the stereo cameras actually, like the way Google does some of their videos is, yes, they have the same kind of depth map that they use. Ozo, I know, was also working on something like that.
This photo of the Samsung's new VR camera is totally misleading. It's not as small as it looks like.
It's quite big. I had a tweet.
Like, I always saw it.
It's interestingly, there's only one on the top. They don't do the double on the top.
Well, you don't really need...
How often do you look straight up?
Yeah, exactly.
You just need to patch the hole, but...
Yeah, so it doesn't really matter. And most of... I was wondering in terms of IPD. So if you look at the cameras that are facing in a similar direction, they're quite far apart. And I don't think that's IPD distance that some cameras do. Like the Ozo had that, and I think the Insta360 Pro as well. So I wonder how they... compensate for that. But with every stereo 360 camera that I've tried, there's always just like weird depth issues, like whether it's things are too close or whether things are too far, and like my eyes just don't converge correctly there. It feels like there's only like a meter or two of just like correct stereo displacement, but anything beyond that, it just doesn't really work. So I don't know. Well, maybe there's a way around it,
but will solve it.
Of course, yes, and don't forget 5G blockchain. Of course, yes.
Yeah.
Chain-enabled 5G. Have you surrounded? Considered blockchain integration into your voxel engine yet, Nathan?
Well, I've been approached. I had an investor suggest it after.
Nice.
After what is that? That VR world where they sell land.
Any land?
No, not any land. Not any land. There's crypto one. The crypto one. Secure land or something. Decentraland. After Decentraland raised $30 million or whatever overnight, selling the coins that will be used to buy the land that is not yet for sale. Then people were like, hey, why don't you sell voxels or something with cryptocurrency? And it feels like almost free money. Yeah. But I don't want currency to be the center. I want creativity to be the center. And eventually we need to figure out how to make money. We're still not making money, but I don't want to do it by creating false scarcity, and that just feels too cheap.
Listen to this man. Yeah, the world out there. Listen to him.
No, don't, because then you won't make money. Do something like different.
5x optimizations per week.
That's right, and I think honestly, like the some of the things that you're working on will come into fruition. I think. like in a few years, or at least like right now, right, 3D is right. still very much stuck into what it's always been for the past couple of decades, but it's only going to grow from here.
It's maddening. It's insane to me that people still do any 3D creation on a 2D screen. Like, all of these big players should have been able to replace basically every one of those tools could be better in VR. Every single one. Like the way that you do retopology is by moving these tiny little vertices of a thing closer to a mesh, and then you click the snap button. Right. Moving those vertices is such a pain on a 2D screen. You have to be rotating, and then you inch this way, and then you rotate. Oh, fuck, I inched it in the wrong direction. So you am I supposed to swear on this show?
No, it's fine. we can
be as sailors. Okay, good.
No, you're good.
But it's like, so that could have been brought in. Even painting is a little bit, painting surfaces is a little bit more intuitive in VR, although you probably eventually still, it's going to be really hard to top Adobe's tools for like, because you'd paint textures in like Photoshop and these sorts. And so, but I think that almost every aspect of 3D creation needs to come into VR, and it could already be there, even with the exception of like one thing.
Even just if it's as simple as to visualize, like just to take a step away from the 2D screen and just to be able to look at something. Because I think the biggest concern when it comes to VR and tools is that you can't be as precise as you can with the mouse and keyboard, or just in terms of just the usual UIs that we're used to. It's just precision, and I totally get that. But on top, the benefits that it introduces, I think, are suddenly it blows open to the interactions that you can have with how you create things than from 2D apps.
Right.
So, yeah, I completely agree. I still get really pissed off that like I'm using reality capture on a 2D screen and I'm like trying to visualize 3D objects and cleaning things up in here is just a pain when you have to like click on the thing that you want to orbit around and then you have to orbit around that it's definitely not
as easy. That's interesting. You set your orbit point.
Yeah, you have to double click and then you're running.
It's ray casting into the scene.
Mm-hmm. Mm. But that's really hard when it's actually an interior scene. So you like when you click on something, you don't know if it's going to click into the interior or it's going to click on the shell of the object on the outside.
So something moves the same way as you would do in Unity.
Unity, you can hold down the right click and then WASD through a scene, which like we're all used to. App has its own, like Mesh Lab has its own.
Right. Movie. Some of them are pretty
true. Mesh Lab definitely.
Yeah.
Awesome, but
buggy. Yeah. It's, I mean, so I've been talking with the reality guys a little bit about the crossover between like doing photogrammetry capture and making it usable in VR and cleaning things up in VR. Because now that we're moving towards smooth meshes, it's like closer to being, our engine is the closest thing yet to being able to do reality capture, but in VR. Even that aspect of 3D creation can totally come right in if you build the right tools. And it just seems it's like so obvious to me that in 5 years you won't be doing any of this except in VR. And that seems like a billion-dollar opportunity. Mm-hmm. Why isn't everybody already like trying to dominate that market before it even exists?
I think most of the people focus on displaying, not interaction. Interaction is in VR something that no one has figured out yet completely.
Yeah,
it involves a lot of cognitive science, a lot of testing, a lot of things. And some people are just having a good instinct. And from what I saw from the videos today in the show, your application seems to be fine, but most of the stuff you try out there just doesn't feel natural. And so everyone is just want to display your things, but the interacting just takes time. So you develop precision tools, whatever. It's just...
Yeah. Unfortunately, you'd be surprised. I mean, we're all surprised that there aren't as much the 3D, the already existing 3D apps already having, at least public announcement that they have like a VR version, probably because they don't think the user base is all there. Like, and their existing customers don't have VR headsets, but like with things like Windows MR, that's all going to change. So hopefully we'll see more in that regard.
I mean, there's also the caveat that if you're doing a 2D thing, what they do is they run at really low frame rate while rotating once you get to these high poly models, but then it can run great as soon as you stop the, as soon as you stop rotating, it doesn't have to re-render the scene. And so you can do things smoothly and you can even like pull meshes around and only re-renders locally around where the change is made and stuff. They have all of these optimizations to make insane high poly rendering possible. And none of it helps in VR. In VR, you have to re-render everything from scratch, every single frame, or else everybody vomits and nobody wants to be alive anymore, you know? And so I think that having built something from the ground up with VR in mind is hopefully the right way to go, because it's the way we've gone. So hopefully we can just eat everybody's lunch. Yep. There will be no more Autodesk. There will be no more Adobe.
Or we'll see a big acquisition coming ahead. Sculptor being picked up.
The episode, my dear.
That's right. This is a. I'm glad we're capturing you in this point in time, because in a few years, you're either you'll be a billionaire or you'll be the new CEO of Autodesk, and that'll be really fun to see.
Or like, I don't want to be that failure. That's always an option too.
There's a big chance. We all fail. Okay, research, we will run out of topics and guests to talk about, because we won't be around anymore either. All right. On that solemn note, let's finish this out. Thank you, Nathan, for joining us from Las Vegas. Thank you, Peter, for joining us from Germany.
Yay.
Yeah. And I am in San Francisco. And with that, we bid you adieu and goodbye.
Adieu. Adios.
Adios.